Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Today we are going to be talking about Supermind, a book by Dr. Norman Rosenthal. And it's kind of interesting to listen to, especially in these days when we're saying about openness, awakeness, mindfulness, TM, transcendental meditation. I'm learning more things about my mind, my spirituality, how I fit into the world. What does all of this mean? I have a lot of friends who are still on the path of, hey, something's hurting, I've got to go to the doctor, give me a pill, because I've got to go somewhere else, you know, about an hour later. They're still on that path. And they're still on the path of the I, what I need, how can I get it, how can I fix it? And really it's about now we're all about the expansionness of our mind, of our body, and of our soul and our spirit and how we fit into this great world. You know, this universe isn't made of just all of these people in silos, as I call them. We can't exist in a silo. We have input from the earth, from the sun. You go outside, you feel the warmth of the sun. You know when it rains. You know when someone's yelling down the street. You know when you need the love of someone else. We exist because we are interconnected with everything. And that's so vitally important that we recognize that when we still go down that I train, as I call it. So today, our guest is Dr. Norman Rosenthal, and his book is Supermind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. And Dr. Norman, it is a pleasure to have you with us today. It's such a perfect timing, and I'm so glad you're here.
Well, it's great to be here.
So, Dr. Norman, don't you think that there's a lot of change in the world, as we call it these days, away from the I and into the we?
Well, I think a lot of people are trying to change themselves by brute force. And I think often that doesn't work.
Yeah.
I should become a better this, I should do a better that, I should get more something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oftentimes the quickest between two points is not necessarily a straight line. Sometimes an indirect path leads you to where you're going better than trying to muscle into it. And that's what I'm picking up from your messaging here, that we're trying to, you know, change ourselves with brute strength, and it doesn't always work. There are other more subtle but strangely more powerful ways to do that.
You know, you and I are both older, which makes great for this conversation because we can see through the generations how people have changed. People have tried different things, you know. We saw the hippies in the 60s and the 70s, and then we saw when the 80s, everybody wanted more and more. We got up to the 90s, and it was success and how many letters you could put behind your name. And now we look at it, we say it still didn't bring us happiness or success or wealth. And what really is that all about? And now that we're in this decade, we're really exploring what is happiness, what is wealth, what is wholeness, what really makes me feel more complete, and is this enough? You know, everybody's, I've got to be on this quest to get more, be more, do more, because I'm just not enough. And that's really, we're really at a point of questioning in that, I think, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. I think one exciting thing about recent decades is that finally scientists are taking happiness seriously. For so much time, they focused only on negative experiences, depression, anxiety, feeling bad, and now there is a legitimacy to trying to understand what is it that makes people happier and actually look at it scientifically. And there's a recognition that this age-old pursuit of happiness that has long been the goal of wise people is now actually being given a scientific legitimacy.
You know, it's interesting when we speak about happiness. My grandmother, she lived until she was almost 100, and her daily routine for probably better than almost all of the time I remember, so more than half of her life, was she would get up in the morning and she would go to church and she would make breakfast. Then she would do her laundry or whatever, make lunch. Better part of the afternoon was sitting on the back porch, and in the backyard she had a Blessed Mary statue, and she would put flowers around it and watch the birds and watch the trees and just watch the clouds and just kind of take in the day for maybe better than 2 to 3 hours a day. And then she would make her dinner, and that would be her day. And I can remember as she went into her later years, and you know how people want to put you into a nursing home because you aren't responding the way in which they believe, or you aren't acting the way in which they believe. They took away that pattern of hers, and she was so, it didn't work for her because that was really her happiness. That was really what made her fulfilled. That was her pattern, and it was okay for her. It was just that it didn't look like what happiness other people would say. And I think a lot of times as we get into these elder years, as many of our listeners have said, is that they've taken away my happiness. I'm in a place where I've got to shut a window. I'm in a place where I've got to do things on their schedule. And it's really about, I think, when you meditate more or when you're focused more, we will say, you know what, I don't have to go down that road, you know, because I can understand that I can maybe bring that inside myself. And I think really, in a way, she was potentially meditating her own way all of her life. It was just that she couldn't hold on to it at the end because of the changes. So I think as we see, you know, people go along in their decades of life, it's how can you become more secure with yourself? How can you become more of knowing who I am? Or how can you become more happy with things and the circumstances still happen around you? It's just that they don't take you to your knees.
Well, you know, it sounds to me like your grandmother was a very happy person. And, you know, it may be that she just was blessed with a very happy disposition because it is known that a fair percentage of our happiness seems to be genetically determined, maybe as much as a third or even a half, some people say. But the rest is stuff we can do something about. And one thing that sounds like made her happy is that she could choose how she spent her day. You know, that she could go to church, that she could sit on her porch, because I think a lot of us, people who are in jobs that they really hate or need to do things in order to just get by, that they would be the last things that they would want to do. I think that's a difficult life because your time is your most precious gift, and if you can choose how to spend it, that's a real luxury, and a lot of people can't do that. So when you talk about that piece, her choosing, her resting, I think it sounds like she had a low stress life, that she could take time out, and there was a kind of meditative quality, as you describe it, and also joy. If she wanted to put flowers around the neck of the Blessed Virgin, she could do that. She could celebrate. She could have that capacity to enjoy things. I think that's a lovely example, and to what extent she developed that and to what extent that was who she was, I don't know, but there is a lesson in the story.
Well, there also is, too, when we say, how can you have a healthy, happy, long life? And we look at people and we ask them when they're in their elder years, we say, well, is it a wine you drink? Is it a pill you take? Is it a food you eat? Is it an exercise you do? When really it's all about your mind, your thoughts, your being, and your presence that may bring you. In other words, that's more of a controller, that's more of the energy of your system that you're going to be able to get to that point and be much happier and feel more fulfilled in your life. It's not that I'm going to feel fulfilled in my life because I have broccoli every single day, you know what I mean? Or that, you know, that I drink, you know, a bottle of red wine, you know, twice a week. It's really about your core, more or less, versus these little things.
It is, but I think one thing that I'm bringing out in the book, this book, which is really how to grow your capacities. And when I say supermind, I'm not just meaning better performance, better functioning. That's all important. But we're not only performing machines. We're living creatures. We're living.
Right.
The experience of our lives is terribly important to us. And so in order to gather information about how people who meditate by this particular form of meditation that has been an interest of mine, which is transcendental meditation, in order to understand what effect that's had on people over time, I surveyed more than 600 such people and asked them a lot of questions. And one question was, do you feel a greater sense of well-being, a greater sense of happiness? And indeed, a very high majority said, yes, we do feel happier since we've started to meditate. And to me, that says that we can do stuff that makes us happier. Incidentally, they also perform better, are more creative, feel as though the world treats them better. Many, many interesting things emerged when I surveyed this population of 600 plus people, which provide a fascinating core to the book.
Let's talk a little bit about what is meditation, because many people will say, I will sit here, close my eyes, and shut out the rest of the world, when really they're sometimes just doing a disconnected form of exercise, but they really haven't gotten to the next step. Or they will say, I will just sit here in my space and not pay attention and close out what's going on around me. And can you share the steps with meditation? Because, or what is the really what the word means? So others can say, maybe that is something I can look at and it's a potential and I really don't have to be so far out of my realm of that I can't understand this concept.
Well, I think meditation comes in different forms. There are different kinds of meditation, and it's important to understand it's not like one size fits all. It's like saying, I had food last night, and one person might have had a fish dinner, and another person might have had vegetarian, and somebody else might have eaten Italian food. It's not all the same, and that's how it is with meditation. So two of the most common forms of meditation come from two great traditions. There's transcendental meditation from the Vedic tradition and mindfulness, which comes from the Buddhist tradition. Let me distinguish a little bit. In transcendental meditation, you go to a meditation center or teacher, and that teacher takes you through the steps of learning how to use a word sound or a mantra in a very special way, and that in turn takes you into a shifted state of consciousness, an expanded state of consciousness, and I can tell you more about that later. But a big piece of my book is understanding how this kind of meditation promotes the growth of consciousness. The other form of meditation that I mentioned, mindfulness, really is focusing on the moment, what is happening now. Saying, don't, you know, worry about the past, it's finished, you can't do anything about it, don't worry about the future, you haven't got control about it, just worry about the present moment. So these are the two big forms, and then there are many sub-forms that I won't get into, but I think it's important for people to understand when they hear the word meditation, they're not just hearing one thing, but that there are many different aspects to that.
Right, and also, too, when we say meditation, I can remember some of this mindfulness and some of this that your mind does actually, you do have control, and you can actually influence the way you respond to things differently. I remember the S, you know, in the 80s. And when that started, some people started with that, and it was like, you mean you would need to take away my watch? You're going to take away, we didn't have cell phones then, but you were going to go into a room, and we were going to control your situation, and you were going to work on quieting your mind. And people said, oh goodness, I, you know, that's not something I can do. But yet there's always been this culture of people that knew all along that really there is something to this. And I think as we share on the radio, people will say, oh, I knew somebody that used to do that a long time ago, but it was kind of, she was kind of woo-woo, she was kind of out there. Or we see other people and we say, oh, yeah, they said about it, and you had to go to this class, and it was kind of hard, and I didn't quite understand it. But really, I think we've now reached a point where so many people can start speaking about their experiences, how they got started with meditation, and also the effects that it has on our body and on our life going forward. And I really think that's what's key about your book, is that you do have a lot of stories in here and experiences and the benefits of meditation, sometimes how to get started and what it might look like for you, because so many people will say, I really don't understand it, and my doctor said, oh, maybe I should go try that, and I really don't know how to get started. Again, your book is Supermind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. I think that's so vitally important because the book really gives a lot of information about the scientific background, about how you have worked with your clients, how you have worked with it yourself and a lot of your friends. So much more information, so many more experiences that people can reference. So I think that's so vitally important. So, Dr. Norman, can you say what, if I'm really like struggling and I've got a lot of anxiety and a lot of things are just going wrong in my life, and you say, how can I quiet my mind and I'll, you know, come out of this meditation and my life will be hunky-dory? And I would really say to them, it doesn't take away your problems in your life, but it may take away your response in the beginning, and then eventually those problems in your life will start to disappear.
Yeah, well, what I think of when you are raising this issue is a wonderful quote by a French author of the last century, Anais Nin. She said, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. So
right.
In other words, a lot of times what we see as terrific problems, we're bringing a lot of worry and anxiety that we don't need to bring. And one thing that I found, you know, is a very key element to this form of meditation is that as people meditate, things just don't seem to be as much of a problem. They're
right.
The same things. Nothing's actually changed in the external world, but internally we're not putting so much weight, we're not putting so much burden on things. So I think that as we worry about things, we need to realize that part of it is the thing itself, but part of it is what we're making of it in our minds. And that is a wonderful quality of meditation. And the really interesting thing that I try to bring up in the book is that everybody knows that while you're actually meditating, you're feeling less anxious, you're feeling better. But the really interesting part is that that feeling percolates through into your day. In other words, you're going to be less anxious after you meditate, between meditations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just for the 20 minutes that you're sitting there, but it's also for the rest of the day. And that's one thing I find quite fascinating. In fact, if I may share, one of the stories in the book is of
yes.
a prima ballerina for the New York City Ballet. And that is a woman named Megan Fairchild, who was kind enough to give me an interview. And the reason that she sought out TM in the first place is that she was having fainting spells. And as you can imagine, for a ballerina to be fainting is not a good thing. And they were worried about putting her on the stage with this melody. Started to meditate. Her body settled down. Her physiology settled down. And the fainting spells went away. But that's not the end of the story. What then happened is that she found that she was changing in her life. She was more willing to take risks. She was more willing to make mistakes, understanding that mistakes are partly how we learn to do things. And just at that time, the call went out from a Broadway musical called On the Town. They were looking for a dancer who would be an actor in the musical, and she had never thought of dancing or felt like she would have the confidence. But because of the TM and the meditation, because it strengthened her confidence in everything, she took the role and did really, really well, and it was a transformative step in her life. So I think that we really need to understand how much we can do to change ourselves, but sometimes it's not a matter of just willing, you know, you could say, stop fainting, stop it already, put
mm-hmm.
your mind over matter. It doesn't
right.
work by willing it, but by this indirect, powerful method of meditation, you are able to change your physiology and also change your life and your behavior.
You know, and also, too, I think, I always attune it to, when you think of the old-fashioned radios, when you used to turn them to come into the dial, sometimes when we have so much static, we can't hear the words that are being said on the radio. So really, when you begin sometimes with meditation or mindful thinking, it's more about reining in that static into yourself so you can start hearing and silencing and quieting, but hearing also your own thoughts. And then eventually you open up you get into the flow and you start opening up yourself to more possibilities in life. If you don't think about spend, 10 hours a day worrying about your kids, what they're doing all the time, you have a whole lot more time to be able to be creative, to think of different things, to expand more on your life, or to be more at peace and quietness. And so bringing all of that static in to a more focused place really is about taking away all of those distractions. And really the things that were important will show up. The things that are unimportant will fall away. So worrying about
really,
the kids.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
So important, because that's exactly what happens. Because I've recommended to a lot of my patients, I'm a practicing psychiatrist for over 30 years, and currently I recommend to a lot of my patients to do meditation. And they say, when am I going to fit it in? And I say, you'll be surprised. You will have more time after you meditate, after you use that time to meditate, because what it does, as you say, it sorts out what really matters. And what doesn't matter just falls by the wayside.
Yeah, and it's about being more present, too. That's mindfulness in this one moment. Because if you worry about all of the future all of the time, you're just expending time and you're expending your energy and you're really not being as creative as you possibly could in that moment. So really taking away all of that really gives you time. And then even the best thing is when time falls away and you don't even notice. I don't know how many times I've said, I don't know what day today is, or I just don't notice the time. And I'm sure you've come across that many times yourself.
Yes, because you get into the flow. Things
right.
move very effortlessly. The day passes quickly and pleasantly, and that often does move time along quickly instead of being bogged down in worries all day long. It's a very nice feeling.
Let's speak for a second about when we say But if I quiet my mind, I'm not going to be creative. I'm not going to be on the mark. I'm not going to be successful in climbing that ladder. Many times I've had people say, oh, well, I have to be observant in so many different realms of my life that, you know, if my 5 cell phones and my 4 assistants can't handle it, you know, I'm on it. And they say, if I meditate, I can't, you know, risk having all of that go away. And
well, it's interesting, you know, because it's the way we think. If we multitask, we do more. But
right.
What they've shown is that when people multitask, actually nothing is getting their full concentration. Everything is being done in a half-baked way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that what happens when you meditate is that you're able to put your clarity of thinking to whatever it is that you want to do and that you value. And if it's something you don't really want to do, maybe you shouldn't be doing it at all. Maybe
right.
rather than doing it in a half-baked way. So I think that you're right. You might think that you'll be so much the poorer. And many times, these days people are going to camps to unplug electronically so that they can actually hear their own thoughts without having them be jammed by cell phones and other devices. And I think you're exactly right. People do have this fear of losing contact with their 5 favorite devices. But in fact, that can often be a liberation.
So, Dr. Norman, also, too, when people say about the external influences, I liken it to when you're listening to a radio station and you hear one word of a song, one word of the news, another word of another newscaster, and you say, all of these things are outside myself, sort of like your kids are yelling, you've got the radio on, your cell phone is ringing, and all these things are going on, and you really don't pay attention to everything. And what really happens is that I've always thought of it as your spirit is really becoming more fragmented. It's really not in its place. And you are just like touching into everything, and you really don't accomplish things. You really don't feel present in giving each person attention.
Well,
you know,
I think that's right. I think
and that's definitely it.
Yeah, I've got a little section in the book called This Crazy World of Ours, you know, this
mm-hmm.
ADD world, because
right.
there's so many distractions coming in, some of it actually quite dangerous, like texting and driving.
Right.
And some of it, you know, the stimuli that assail us all day. And we can actually invite these stimuli in, people who have the TV going on in the background or just noise of various kinds that maybe they don't even need to have that actually jam you from being able to think straight. Well, I think that's one thing that the meditation does, is it gives you the opportunity to let some silence into your soul. Let some silence come into your mind and let it in. It's kind of like bathing in a pure liquid in a way,
right.
a crystal pure lake. And then what happens is that silence infuses your daily life. And so that as you go about things, like take for example right now, we're talking, we're having a great conversation, but I'm feeling a kind of a silence and peace sitting alongside the engagement. And it's very, very pleasant. And it actually helps you to choose your words more carefully. And things just seem to flow more easily. You connect better with people. That's what I mean by the supermind. And we're having an example of that right now.
And I think, too, when you don't have some, when you learn in meditation, you learn that the distractions is just that extra energy around it. So if you are sitting with your kids and the telephone is ringing and you've got the radio on, after a period of meditating, maybe months, weeks, maybe years, you will say, you know what, I'll shut off the radio. I'll tone down my telephone and I'll listen to my child. And you do these things sometimes unconsciously because you're just in that space and you crave it so much more. that all of that other distraction resonance just doesn't appear in your life anymore. So really, you start noticing, how can meditation show up in my life after I become a little bit more in control of what is the distractions of my life, and they don't show up?
No, I think that's right. I think you learn to appreciate, you know, little things because you are in the moment. In fact, you know, mindfulness and transcendental meditation have been juxtaposed as in some ways opposite to each other. But what many friends have said is that since they've been doing transcendental meditation, they're more mindful than ever. You know,
right.
I'm sitting here looking out at the trees. I see a little bird hopping across the pergola outside. It's in the moment, and it's lovely. And I think that's the gift you give yourself when you take that little bit of time each day. In TM, we take 20 minutes twice a day. It's a little bit of time. You know, a patient first told me to do it. I had done it many years ago and allowed it to lapse. And then he said, you know, what's really making me happy is this transcendental meditation. And I said, well, you know, I did it long ago, and he urged me to get back to it. He kind of wouldn't leave me alone until I did. And so I owe a great deal to him, and also credit myself for actually listening, you know?
Yes.
And so that was one of the best things that anybody did for me, because I wrote a book called Transcendence. And that was a New York Times bestseller, and it was about what meditation can do to help people with all kinds of problems, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, cardiovascular trouble. It's really proven, scientifically proven benefits went on and on and on. And, you know, I was really happy to put that all out there, but then I thought I'd said as much as I could about the subject. But I continued to meditate, and as I continued to meditate, that's when the silence began to grow, the ideas, the creativity, the energy, the passion, and I realized that I was not alone in that regard, because by then I had already told a number of my patients, please start meditating, and they did, and they came back to me with the same stories. We're leading fuller lives, we're leading richer lives, there's more interest, there's more happening. And I realized that what was really happening is that the mind was basically growing in some important ways. That's why I called the new book Supermind.
Let's speak for a minute about things, material things, and attachment and detachment. If we look at the 90s, it was a bigger house. How big could your house be? And if you only had one car and everybody shared it, that was just not going to work. And we look at, you know, everything was more, more, more. Now we see a trend towards tiny homes, towards less material goods, towards giving towards others. So I think we as a society have really started to pay attention to, I don't need so much stuff. I don't need so many things in my life. And if we look at it in the concept of the mind, all of this stuff is really another distraction and another kind of resonating sound around, you know, how can I be attached to all of these things that I believe are part of me or part of my life when really they are all just taking more energy away from me and my system, you know? And it's really about decreasing, decluttering, and opening up awareness and opening up your space where we're going now, correct?
Yes, I think that's exactly right, you know. I have a baseball player friend who says that they have an acronym in baseball, WIN, W-I-N, what's important now? And I think that's a great question, but the answer is sometimes elusive. You know, when you're cluttered with so many things you have to do, it's hard to choose. And that's what meditation helps you to do, to figure out what's important now, what's important next. And that's part of the challenge. And if we can figure that out, we're on our way.
And even, you know, feng shui teaches us, you know, declutter your space. so that energy can flow more, you know. You don't need to be attached to a lot of the past or a lot of the things that you've collected that you said, these are going to make me feel better. No, those things don't make you feel better. You make yourself feel better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Well, you know, I think relationships are wonderful and experiences are wonderful. I think people are wising up to turning away from things as a source of happiness. I don't think things make us very happy because before long, our things have gone out of fashion or we don't like them anymore. We want new things, and we keep having the illusion that new things are going to keep making us happy and maybe not, you know?
It's definitely something different. You know, I have a dear friend who works with a lot of people who are at end of life, and it's so interesting. You could go by a house in a neighborhood and everything will be out on the street, and you say, oh, they must have passed away yesterday or last night or last week. They're cleaning out the house, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you think about all of those things that you're holding on to, that's where they go. They go to the street for the garbage man, and it's precious and important.
Yes, and the thing is that the things that you think are such treasures
get
pennies on the dollar because, you know, other people don't value them. They may feel like treasures because you have memories attached to them, but to other people they're just stuff, secondhand stuff.
Right, because memories aren't contained in the object. Memories are contained in yourself. You know, we don't put value on a memory. We don't put value on, you know, your attachment to that or your past experience because it isn't contained in the object. It's contained in you. And so many times people can't cut that cord, so to speak.
Yeah,
speak.
You know, I also think that a big movement now is that in order to try and hold on to memories and hold on to the past, people are just surrounded by clutter. And there's a big movement to try and declutter and to sort of pare one's life down to the elements that really matter. And I think that doesn't only happen with stuff, but it happens with activities, it happens with relationships. There's a great sense that there's only so many hours in a day and so many days in the rest of your life. And there's a recognition that we want to spend those days in the most valuable, most interesting, most important ways. That's, I think, what meditation helps you to do. That's what a supermind helps you to do. Figure out what is really important and what you want to hold on to.
I think now we've come up, as we've had in the past several years, when people were losing their homes and losing their money, those attachments were getting cut. And now we're at a point where people are fearing loss because those people that had their homes gone or whatever, or their bank accounts, they're more on a scramble more than ever to hoard. I've seen this after Hurricane Katrina. People said they lost everything. And what they did with their money and after that in the past 10 years is they've now have homes that are very much a hoard system. In other words, they had said, I lost that. I have to have it. I lost my 100 CDs. I've got to go buy 100 more. I lost my shoes. Well, I need to buy 10 today. You know, that concept. And the fear of loss.
That's how people are dealing with loss.
Right.
Loss is a trauma, and people can deal with it in different ways. And one way is to try and make up for the lost time, the lost stuff, the lost connections. And sometimes there's a desperation about that doesn't necessarily fill the gap, you know, that doesn't necessarily satisfy. I think people have to acknowledge the loss and maybe say, you know, I'm going to live a little differently. I'm going to live, you know, simpler or in some other way, not to try and just replicate everything.
Let's speak for a second about death because it's the ultimate loss. Many people believe. And when we get up to that point, we say, you know, well, I'm losing someone or I'm losing my own life or, you know, they get these drastic diagnoses from, you know, if you're a physician and it's like you have, well, maybe you might have 2 weeks or 6 months, I don't know. And people feel a drastic sense of loss. And death is really looked at so differently, I think, by many other belief systems now. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think this fits into the other topic you were talking about, one that I have a whole book on, a whole chapter in the book, sorry, and that is attachment and detachment, that balance, that delicate dance. And in fact, you know, when I was writing the book, I was challenged with that very balance. I lost a dear sister of mine who was actually younger than myself in South Africa in the middle of writing the book, and I went home with our other sister just to grieve and to take care of that whole situation, and came back, and the last thing I felt like was to pick my pen up and start writing again, and I'm using that metaphorically. Of course, we all use computers these days. But that was, I had to confront the fact that I was writing a book that I am very devoted to and care a great deal about, but I was also grieving. And somehow balancing that mix of needing to re-engage, let go a little bit. Of course, I never will let her go completely, and I wouldn't want to. But that balance is one that I think has been greatly helped by my own meditation and by this delicate dance. When I learned psychiatry, we never learned the importance of detaching. We only learned the importance of engaging, loving, caring, all of which indeed are actually important, but we never learned how to detach, so, or the importance of detaching. But of course, we all have to do that in order to get on with life. And as you just were talking about, the actual ultimate detachment is to detach from life itself. And I think that part of leading a full life is really coming to terms with the understanding that we are going to die, all of us. And that if you can just feel a little better about that, the rest of your life becomes less worrisome, because there are a lot of people who worry about dying but are scared to even bring it up. And you know, there's a strange thing about worry, that the more you avoid something, the more you worry about it.
Right.
You know, people who worry about getting into an elevator and avoid elevators, they get more terrified of elevators, not less terrified. So it's the same with death. It's kind of sitting out there, and, you know, but we don't have to let it affect our lives. We can just understand that it's part of our lives. And in fact, a beautiful quote that I have from my book is actually by the modern founder of Transcendental Meditation. His name was Maharishi, and he says this. He says, when life leaves the body, it is the breath. It's like the breath leaving, like transcending. For one who has been accustomed to this experience for many years, the transition is easy, painless, and blissful, not catastrophic. Dropping the body is like letting a bird out of its cage. And I thought that was very, very lovely.
It absolutely is. And I think to not carry so much fear about things that we have no control, because it really will take and free up so much of your time, so much of your capability, so much of your creativeness, and so much of your happiness. So many times that when we look at it these days, people don't even know what happiness is, or can appreciate the small things. I've had some people, I will say to them, how do you feel today? And they go on this negative tirade. And I would say, no, is it better than yesterday? Mm-hmm. Is it different than yesterday? Do you feel 1%? That's a difference. And to appreciate that difference, that happiness and that lightness, yet so many have been so stuck in this negativity pool that they just can't see the lightness through the forest, you know? Mm-hmm. And to start to be able to do that, I think meditation really does that. Because slowly, eventually, you will have to. You will either give up meditating, or you will have to, and eventually it will occur that you will stop being on that path and start saying, it's okay now. Now I can figure something else out.
Well, I echo that. I think you've put it really, really well.
You know, I think many times your clients, you know, and I'm sure mine also, that we have said, you know, when they come in for a repeat visit, how do you feel today? And you don't want to hear the same story that they gave last time. You are always looking for that golden thread, you know, to be able to help someone. I think that really meditation really does help that, and that's very important. Dr. Norman,
I might say to somebody, you know, I'm hearing that same problem every time.
Yeah.
It must become very tiresome for you.
Yeah.
To feel like the needle never moves off the groove, the story never changes. What can we do to change the story? How can we change the narrative? One of the people I spoke with in the book, you know, people would talk with her. This often happens, for example, let's say you've just broken up in a relationship and you've developed a story that you're the victim. She cheated on me. She always put me down. She didn't think I was good enough for her. I'm now defining myself according to the, or it could be the woman saying, he cheated on me, he didn't, he was a son of a, you know what. So in any event, you know, this is a story that you keep telling. And then I might say, you know, that's a story you're telling a lot. Are you beginning to define yourself as this victim or who was rejected? Let's think of some other stories that you might want to replace it with. Well, what kind of story? Well, what is it that you would like to do now, now that you are free, now that you're out of the relationship? What other things do you enjoy in life? Who else are you? Let's hear some other stories. And pretty soon, the better stories are crowding out the dismal one. And the person has a sense of, you know, this is my life. I have an opportunity to make of it what I want. And I don't have to stick with one narrative. Let me drop that one. And I think the flexibility of being able to do that comes from the freedom you get when you meditate. It's hard to say, why does this lead to that? It just does.
You know, the concept, we're pretty much getting to the end of the show here, but I did want to touch on this for a second, and it falls right in line with what you just said. When people feel they are a victim of situations or things around them or other people or life in general, really, then they say, they get to the point where they realize that things need to be differently. They say, I need to take back my power. And I always say to them, oh, man, I don't want the power back from that abuser. I don't want my power back from that other person that was hurting me or from that other situation. I want to be able to unfold my new inner power, which is so much more richer. It's so much more mine. Because, hey, you know, if you've had, let's say, a domestic abuse, I don't want my power that I gave him back. Hey, it's been tarnished. You can have it. Go, take away. Go, you know.
No, it depends what you mean by power. Let's return to your grandmother. Her power was her ability to choose how she spent her day, was her ability to go to whichever church she wanted every single morning, to hang flowers on her own statue. She had a life of independence. She didn't have to ask anybody's permission. There's a power there. I think power can mean a lot of different things. And I think power over somebody is not necessarily the most valuable power in the interpersonal realm.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Norman, in closing, can you touch a little bit on your last chapter? You spoke about the universe. You know, we think about, you know, everybody thinks, I just resonate inside my simple community, and this is just as big as it. It's all about. And how important we are to the universe and how important we are all a part of it. You know, that interconnectedness, I think so many people don't even, we're just now starting to put those words into our vocabulary.
Well, yes, I think what happens with consciousness as you meditate is it grows. First it's in the meditation, then it's in your daily life, and you yourself become more centered and more silent. And then it moves out beyond you, and you say, wait a sec, there's a consciousness out there. How can I connect with it? And people who've been meditating, for example, friends of mine in New York, say, you know, they've stopped walking past homeless people as though they're just garbage on the sidewalk. They've begun to think, who is this person? How did he get there? What can I do to help? Mm-hmm. It's a kind of way in which consciousness expands so that it begins to embrace other people. And I think that's a natural progression as one continues to meditate. And that's why I've left it at the end of the book. And who knows, maybe someday I'll write another book about what happens when our consciousness grows. But for right now, one book is quite enough, and this one is called Supermind. And incidentally, if people want to find out more about me, on my website, it's normanrosenthal.com. Very simple to find.
Well, Dr. Rosenthal, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us here today to talk about your new book, Supermind, on Transcendental Meditation, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life. It's such a pleasure to have you. I think so many stories we've shared today, people will say, oh, it may just resonate with them, and they'll say, I'll check out the book, maybe I'll check into a class, or maybe that might be something that will really help me. And I think we had a great conversation today, and I really appreciate you coming to join us today.
Oh, listen, it's really been a joy. Thank you for having me as a guest, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Norman Rosenthal, his link is on the bottom of today's show page directly to his website. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.